good afternoon and good evening. Wherever you may be, I hope you have blue skies and a smile in your heart. Welcome to That Other Lifestyle podcast, where we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the weird sides of this wild lifestyle. Today, we are talking about stats and data and sharing numbers I find interesting, guesstimating how many swingers are out there, sharing how often other swingers are shagging, and my own ramblings on this data and stat. Before we dive into that, I know I have fans of the show, and I know y'all want to interact with me. I also know that privacy is important. There could be hesitation on your part to subscribe to a swinger podcast or a YouTube channel because you're concerned that people might find out. Those Amazon Alexas and Google Homes will rat you out the first chance they get. I get it though. Much easier to click the subscribe button on a normal, safe, non-spicy history podcast than a show dedicated to the frisky and fun arts. If you can, if you want to, I ask you to follow me or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to me on right now. As an alternative, if you're on SDC.com, I have a group over there called That Other Lifestyle. See, easy name to remember. Go look it up and join the group. I keep that page updated with new blog posts and new episodes as well. If you want to contact me directly, go look at my website, thatotherlifestyle.com. They got a contact link on there. I want to respect my audience's discretion and still give y'all a chance to connect with me. I have been told this podcast is great to listen to while you and your spouse are having awesome, explosive reclaim sex. Try it. I dare you. Right now, the biggest support you can offer to me, and I will appreciate it so much, is a recommendation to a friend. Make them listen to all the episodes on a road trip. Refuse to play anything else. If you're at a party, just slip an episode into the playlist. I promise everyone will love it. So over the weekend, I was sitting at a bar with a group of friends, pondering my potential audience for this podcast. And I guess my audience will be mostly swingers, maybe a handful of vanilla people who just want to sneak a peek at what the neighbors are doing over the fence. The cool evening air and tequila beckoned my mind to wonder further. How many swingers are in the U.S.? How many in the world? How do you measure that? More questions bounce around my brain as I sip my margarita. How often do other swingers tap that ass? How many times a week or month or year are we doing the horizontal shuffle with others? And then I started noticing something. Why is that other couple looking at us? Why are they walking this way? Do I know them? Why are they smiling at us? More details on that story later. These questions led me down a rabbit hole of internet sleuthing where I found a bunch of sexy numbers and titillating percentages that I now want to share with you. This is going to be one of those nerdy episodes. I found a couple of websites that have research on this topic. Some of the studies are a little bit older, but they're still fun to share. Have you ever sat in like a doctor's office and wondered, is there anyone else in here in the lifestyle? How many swingers are out there? What are the chances there's another swinger couple living in my neighborhood? If I grab 100 people off the street, what are the chances one of them is a swinger? The answer to that is about 2 people, by the way. BedBible.com compiled a survey which was updated in September 2023, thereby making it the most recent sources of super cool and interesting statistics out there. Primarily, this is about the USA, but we do have some international data to share. I see you, Ireland and Canada. Thank you for listening. Sharing these numbers is good and useful for newbies. This lifestyle can be lonely when you start out. When you're first starting out, you make a profile on a site, and might I recommend going to my website, thatotherlifestyle.com, and using my link to sign up for SDC. So you put pictures up, you agonize over the perfect angles and what to show, and you write a bio, and oh, please make sure you write a bio and write something better than looking for new friends or dipping our toes in, tee-hee-hee-hee. Well, no shit. You're looking for people to bang and you decide to make a profile. Great. Welcome to the club. So you make a profile. You might reach out to a few couples in your local area. Maybe you have luck and make connections. Maybe you find a cool swinger tribe to join or a couple of them. Let me get my rant hat really quick. If a person summons the courage to write a message to you on a website, do not be an asshat in your response. I get it. I don't like getting just the simple, hey, either. But there's a living, breathing person on the other side of that profile. You might not be interested in that other couple based on whatever criteria you have, but you don't have to be a raging jackass about it. Whatever malfunction you have in your personality, or maybe you're having a bad day, do not take it out on others on the internet. I've heard a few times from newbies that when they reach out to couples, the newbies will get some kind of rude, dismissive response. Be nice to newbies. Don't run people out of this hobby because you want to be a jackass and gatekeep. And here's the funny part Mr. Jackass ain't thinking of. They might see the person they were rude to at a party. They might make eye contact with them, and then they remember that you were a fucking jackass in your response to them. And if you happen to see a jackass at a party, wave at them and smile really big. Make it awkward. Thank you for putting up with my rant and sharing the first number I got. 2.4 million. 2.4 million or 1.1% of the U.S. population are active swingers between the ages of 18 and 80, according to bedbible.com. Keyword there is active in the lifestyle. If you're 80 and still in the lifestyle, good for you. Just get it. There is some discrepancy in this number as other sites and resources gave me wildly varying numbers or percentages, though. This study from Bed Bible uses the term swinger without defining specifically what they consider swinging versus ethical non-monogamy participation. And all this data is self-reported, meaning they found a bunch of people who, one, are cool with saying, yeah, we fuck people outside of our marriage, and two, willing to enter the survey. I've seen other reports that the number of swingers in the U.S. is 200,000, which I feel is grossly way too low. Another study said 20 million. Another study said it was about 7.8 million. There's a big range there for this ill-defined secretive subculture. Over in the UK, with a population of 67 million, it's estimated that 1.5 million would classify themselves as swingers. As far as attitudes regarding the lifestyle and its acceptance around the world, 51% of those surveyed in Finland believe swinging is acceptable. New Zealand is number two at 48%, while the US came in at 46%. For European countries, based on a 2017 study I found, France has the most swingers by percentage at 34%. Finland is number two at 27%. The UK is number three at 22%. And for reference, the US is around 2.5% of the population that are in the lifestyle, according to the same 2017 study. So I got one place that said 1.1% and the other said 2.5%. So let's just split the difference. We'll call it 2%, or about 6 to 8 million swingers in the U.S. From the Bed Bible study, 8.3 million in the U.S. have tried swinging at some point. So which, doing some extrapolation here, let's say 1 in 40 people have tried swinging. So next time you're sitting in the DMV, look around. Probably somebody else in that room has done some spicy hanky-panky. And that still leaves 98% of the U.S. population firmly in the vanilla world. Speaking of the vanilla world, here is another divergent tangent piece of advice. Be cool in public. We need to be respectful of the environment we're in and the crowd around us. Last weekend, like I said, we were out with our LS friends at a bar, and our LS friends invited us to join them, and they invited some vanilla friends that night too to go watch a band. Pro tip, always tell your LS friends if vanilla people are going to be around. It is good to warn us. Keeps our hands in our pockets and we behave ourselves. Bonus pro tip, have a cover story on how you meet your LS friends. We can't be honest and say we met on the internet and collectively have seen each other naked. Make it simple and boring so people don't question it. Like we met through work or the gym. Remember, simple is better. The vanilla people with us that night had no clue about our collective hobby, which is fine. My wife and I are perfectly capable of behaving ourselves in public. No playing grab a dick in front of the normies. So we're sitting on the patio. I got my wife, got our friends, got their friends, and I'm just drinking my margarita, pondering the swinger population question. And I notice a couple walk in the door. I see them scan the room, and their gaze stops in our general direction. And then their eyes look at us, and the wife points towards us. I don't recognize these people. I am now flipping through the stack of faces in my brain, trying to remember if we have met them before, like at a party or online. And now I'm wondering, why are they approaching us? Like, obviously walking towards us. My spidey sense is going off. Because my brain is broken, my first thought is, oh, they might recognize us from somewhere spicy. They're walking over to say hi, and then there's going to be this awkward conversation with them, and then the vanilla people around us, they're going to ask how we know each other, and that's it, we're all about to get outed. These nice vanilla people are about to learn some facts about us and their friends that they can't unlearn. I watch the couple, they slither through the crowd until they're next to my wife. Over the noise of the bar, I hear them yell out a compliment about my wife's earrings. Then they just float away into the night air. If I'm honest, it was way more anticlimactic than I was expecting. But crisis averted. Just nice people giving out compliments. I can live with that. Getting recognized, it could happen though. It is possible a couple might recognize you or another couple in public from one of the sites, like at a bar or a Little League game or a parking lot of a grocery store. But remember, just because you recognize them does not mean they're in lifestyle mode at this moment. And really, think about it. How the hell are you supposed to explain to a random person you're waving at another person and yelling out, oh, hey, I recognize you from a swinger site. I think I've seen your butthole. Anyway, nice to meet you. Don't do that. Surprisingly, my wife and I, we've never encountered another swinger couple out in the vanilla world, despite roughly 1 in 40 people being in the lifestyle. Talking about like around town and grocery shopping, we've never knowingly run into another couple that we know in the lifestyle. And I know it's a concern that people have of, oh no, what if someone recognizes me? I'm just telling you, it hasn't happened to us. If it did, I'd wave. I'd make eye contact and just start waving frantically. I would make sure they see me. Waving and smiling big, I would make it awkward. I'm kidding. Speaking of who knows about your double life, we got stats on this too. Bed Bible asked study participants, who knows about you being a swinger? 44% of swingers do not tell anyone about it like a naughty little secret. I did a whole episode on how we are all superheroes in the lifestyle and we all have secret identities. I think keeping this little aspect of your marriage a secret is fun. It is an intensely private matter that two people can keep between them and only them. 41% tell their close friends, which I get. It's super hard not to say something, anything about what you did last weekend. And who knows, maybe your friends are a lot cooler than you think they are. As far as telling friends, there's three possibilities. One, they don't care. And I say that in a nice way. They cheer you on and they let you be you and they support you. Second possibility, they judge the ever-living shit out of you, but they don't say anything and respect your privacy. Third, for those really shitty friends out there, let's call them frenemies. They now know a world-destroying secret about you. Be careful who you share your participation in the lifestyle with. This is not a socially acceptable hobby. People can and will get in trouble for doing this. People have gotten in trouble for doing this. If you tell a friend, you better trust that friend with your life, because that's what you're doing. You're trusting them to keep this secret and protect your livelihood, your spouse's livelihood, your social interactions, and your community involvement. Your existence is literally in their hands. But ain't gonna lie, it is fun to see your friends' faces when you do tell them. The conversation usually goes from disbelief to logistics. People want to know the how and the what and the why and how swingers meet other swingers and what clothing people wear on dates and what music's on in the background while four people are getting naked together. Always goes from disbelief to logistics. 7% have told their close family members. I can tell you why this one is here. Babysitting. If your mother or cousin or sister or whoever is watching your kids every weekend while you're out doing some hoe shit, they might get suspicious after a while. You must always prepare a carefully constructed lie each time with backup collateral or just tell the truth. Think like spy mission. You need a cover story and evidence like receipts and tickets and pictures. Go research events around the area where their hotel takeover is occurring so you have a cover story and a rule of thumb. The closer the family member, the nosier they are and the more details they're going to require. So be ready. Use Photoshop. Take pictures. 4%, like the host of this podcast, me, Jason, hi, are out and share their experiences with everyone. Everyone is on their own lifestyle journey, and it is completely up to you and your spouse how much y'all share with anyone outside the LS. There's no right or wrong answer here. This is all based on your personal situation. But if you do need to construct a story to secure a babysitter, I am on board to help. Let's do some spy shit. We can Photoshop pictures. We can get some fake receipts, travel documents. I am here for you. Anyway, back to stats. Participation in the lifestyle is most popular among 40 to 49-year-olds. This makes sense. At that point in your life, generally if you have kids, they're older, so you have more freedom on the weekends. You've probably been married a while, so there's a good foundation. And again, if you're 80 and still rocking it, just get on with your bad self. According to Bed Bible, most swingers are between 30 and 59 years old, while only 5% of swingers are younger than 30. From my personal observations, I have not met many people in the lifestyle below 30. The ones I have met usually fall into the polyamorous category versus swinging. The difference being swinging has connotations of being like a long-term relationship and fooling around with people outside of that relationship, while polyamory is more about having multiple relationships at one time. The lifestyle or ethical non-monogamy is way more popular in the millennial and Gen Z generations than previous times, according to a bunch of studies I saw. And I can say this, we have it so much easier than previous generations. Not in a, like, we used to walk uphill 10 miles both ways to school, but with internet and technology, finding others in the lifestyle is so much easier. There's apps everywhere, websites for every permutation of ethical non-monogamy. The evolution of the language of ENM has advanced leaps and bounds in the last 10 years. In the past, way back in the time before the internet, which existed, which happened, one method swingers used to meet each other, there were catalogs and magazines. Personal sections in the back of dedicated magazines like Sun California's magazine or Silk Swingers over the UK. This was a thing, like personal ads. Nowadays, how do swingers meet each other? Got stats, y'all. So from the Bed Bible study, 72% of swingers use internet sites. Usually the best option for finding other couples for dates or double dates, I gotta admit. The sites are cool and useful. When you're prospecting, you can see pictures, a bio, details of other play style, all right there from the convenience of your computer. 44% use swing social clubs, i.e. sex clubs. Another good option if you just want to skip the awkward online conversations and get straight to meeting and seeing and interacting. Everyone in that club is there for the same reason. Everyone, by entering that building, is now a swinger. The downside of the clubs is, it's hard to have meaningful conversations over the teeth-rattling music. Hard to connect when the whole conversation is nothing but screaming. 42% use private parties. We are a partying bunch of people. It is part of our collective culture. This year, my wife and I have been to a couple of house parties. The crazy thing for vanilla people when they hear swinger party, instantly images of orgies pop in their heads. Crazy thing is, nobody did anything at the majority of the parties we attended. But I am a fan. They're usually cheaper than a sex club and way more intimate. Parties are definitely harder to find, and couples benefit the most from being part of a swinger tribe or a group of friends if they're looking for house parties. House parties tend not to be advertised very well, so it's all word of mouth. Pro tip. If you go to a house party, the traditional present for the host is alcohol, but check to make sure your hosts are alcohol drinkers. Do not give sober people liquor as a present. In lieu of wine or liquor, party games or card games are another really good option. Backup possibility, a bag of ice. We always need more ice at parties. Next up, 41% say they meet swingers through other swingers. What I infer from this, word of mouth. If you have a good time with a couple and you think they might click with your friends, you're going to give them a good recommendation. I will need to devote an entire episode to maintaining a positive reputation in the lifestyle, but right now, let me drop this. This is a small community. Your local swinger community is way smaller and tight-knit than you know and believe. Everybody knows everybody. And unfortunately, in my experience, the community can be gossiping sons of bitches too. Be authentic, be genuine, communicate, you'll be fine. Speaking of magazines earlier, 5.5% of swingers still use swinging newspapers or magazines. This blew my mind. I need to know. I have no idea how to find these. I want to find one now. I need to go looking. 20% use other. That's all it says is other. That does not help me at all. It doesn't help us. I want to know what other is. So what does your local community look like? How big is your local community? Maybe your geographic area or maybe your entire state. I got more data. For my U.S.-based audience, what state has the highest percentage of active swingers? Take a wild guess. Wrong is Delaware. By percentage of population, Delaware has the highest percentage of active swingers, while Massachusetts has the lowest amount. For Australia, I have conflicting results on whether it's Perth or Melbourne have more swingers. For New Zealand, Invercargill is the swinger capital. I had to go look up where that is. It's on the bottom of the South Island. In the U.S., Florida has the highest total number of swingers at almost 200,000, beating out California and Texas. Despite Florida having the most swingers, though, Portland, Oregon has the most sex clubs at 39. Then you got Seattle at 37, Miami and Pittsburgh tie at 36. Oh my God, that's a bunch of sex clubs. If you're near a major metropolitan area, I promise you have a sex club or three within a two-hour drive of you. Turns out some cities have a bunch of them. I had no idea. It is a big business, and it caters to a desire all swingers have. Not like that pervert. We want to party. We want to party away from vanilla people and enjoy ourselves and relax. Swingers will pay a premium to know that whatever event they are at is populated by only other lifestyle people. I know I will. There is freedom in knowing that everyone in the room has the same hobby. Speaking of clubs, not everyone goes to clubs. It might be a distance or intimidation. 34% of swingers have never been inside a club. 4% have gone more than 20 times a month. That's bunches. For clubs, don't be intimidated at all. You think it will be the super sexy environment, maybe like in that movie Eyes Wide Shut, everyone floating around in masks and robes and anonymous sex and orgies and moaning and debauchery. I am positive that totally exists somewhere, but I promise your local club, you walk in and you're much more likely to see 50 people doing the Cupid Shuffle versus slapping genitals around on velvet couches. Don't get me wrong, there is totally fuckery going on in designated places in those clubs. That happens, but most of the environment is like any other nightclub or bar where people just don't wear clothes. This sounds amazing. You think, where do I find these clubs? You don't. They find you via a complicated system of letters, owls, and wizard spells. It's a whole process to get in. You gotta know the right person, and then the secret password, and then show up at dawn on an island carrying only a feather and a scrap of paper. I'm making all that up. The clubs are out there, but they're not like too out there. What's wild is there's an entire secret ecosystem of businesses that support the lifestyle. Clubs, cruises, events, clothing, the swinger industry is worth $9.5 billion globally. $1.3 billion of that comes from just swinger travel, with cruises making up almost half a billion. The trick with lifestyle clubs and takeovers, they need to advertise, but they can't advertise in traditional ways. You will never hear a radio ad for your local sex club. They can't use newspapers or TV due to obscenity laws and the gasping, pearl-clutching crowd. You can try searching on the internet, type in sex club in your local metropolitan area and see what you find. You might get lucky. If you do find a club online, scope it out first. Read reviews, check the area, check with friends, do your due diligence. The best choice, though, is to use one of the swinger sites. The clubs and parties and takeovers advertise their events on the site. It's a safe space for swingers and a safe space for businesses to advertise to swingers. And why is there so much money in this industry? Because swinging is expensive. If you're new to this hobby, let me warn you, swinging is expensive. What? How can hooking up with other people be expensive? It's not. The sex part should be free. And if it ain't free, you are now in a weird situation where I cannot help you. The events and parties and getting into organized places to meet other swingers, that's the expensive part. The admission for clubs can run from like $30 a couple in a small town to upwards of $200 for an upscale club in a large city like Vegas. And fun fact, most swinger clubs do not serve alcohol. They will provide bartenders and mixers, but it means bringing your own liquor from home. That doesn't sound too bad. You think I could go cheap on that? Yes, but what they lose out on liquor sales they make up for in the cover charge, that's why it's so high. For a club in another city, you're looking at the cover fee, which should be outlined on the club's website. Then you may have a hotel stay for the weekend, plus food and parking. I want to warn you, a night out at a sex club can be pricey. The other option is hotel takeovers. For hotel takeovers, you must purchase a hotel room along with the price of admission. Usually sold as package deals, they can easily super common start out at like $500 for a couple for a long weekend. I know you may have cringed at that cost, but you do get your money's worth. You get to enjoy a full hotel with only lifestyle people. You get daytime activities like day drinking by the pool, which is super fun by itself. And then you got themed parties every night. Parties though, parties mean outfits. Outfits and costumes. Costumes for parties can be pricey. My wife now has a whole closet full of costumes for parties and events. I never thought I would have a hobby that involves so much dressing up and ball shaving. And those sites that 70% of swingers use to meet people and coordinate events, those have monthly or yearly fees too. The apps have fees. Meeting swingers can be pricey. There's always the option of cruising around the local grocery store, waving around a pineapple, and inviting people back to your hot tub, but that is not a super successful method. And testing. Testing is another expense. Testing can be covered by your health insurance, or it could be an out-of-pocket expense. Still need to spend that money though and get it done for your peace of mind. And don't think you're getting off cheaper if you just stick to dates with other couples, because then you have drink cost and food cost and probably a babysitter and then possibly a hotel room for the actual nookie time. What do the numbers say about swinger marriage satisfaction? In a survey from 2019, 79% of respondents said they were happy in their marriage versus 65% of vanilla couples. 63% of swingers said they were happier in their marriage after they started swinging. Most swingers, 68%, said that jealousy was not a problem. To address a question I have heard come up often, do I swing too much or not enough? Or maybe I'm a bad swinger because we only swing once a year. How do I stack up on adult activities versus other couples? I got data from the Electronic Journal of Human Sexuality to answer this. All right, most couples, 24% swing, as in have sex with other people, 4 to 6 times a year, so roughly every 2 months. 23%, about the same percentage, swing 2 to 4 times a year, so once a quarter or once every 6 months. 20% swing once a month. 13% swing more than once a month. 4% swing less than once a year. And rounding it out, 3% are more than once a week. The answer to how much or not enough or too little is there is no answer. There is no right or wrong answer. If you only want to swing once a year, cool. If you want to bang it out once a week with a nice couple, that's fine too. There is no definitive answer on how much is too much. That is a personal question based on a couple's availability, interest, time, holistic situation. I know couples that go to a sex club all the time and never knock boots with anyone. I know couples who go to sex club and only engage in fuckery with their own partner. I know other couples who do hot naked yoga with others every week. I want to contrast this information with a different data set from Bed Bible, specifically around vanilla marriage sex rates. According to the study, 16% of married couples, assuming vanilla people here, have not had sex in the previous year. Top reasons cited for adults on why they have difficulties in having sex. Number one, fading away enthusiasm. Number two, long work hours. And three, lack of personal time and space. That is super depressing. So doing some rough math here using numbers from wildly different sources. 16% of the 133 million married adults in the US comes out to about 21 million married people not having sex. And swingers are over here worried we're doing it too much. One more number I want to share. I heard this when we started the lifestyle and I cannot find the original source, so I apologize. Still want to share it. 18 months. 18 months is the average time span people are active in the lifestyle. They might drop out and never come back or take a break or maybe try a different version of ethical non-monogamy. And I really wish I could find the original source though so I could dive into it and share some more about that. But in my experience, yeah, this sounds about right. Couples dive in hard for the first 6 months, level off their activity, and maybe they burn out on the whole hobby, or they stick with it. But again, you do you. To round out this episode, and because I don't have a good way to finish this out, let's do some math together and learn. According to Bed Bible, during heteronormative sex, as in a man and a woman putting bread in the oven, the average person, going to say man for simplicity's sake, the average person with a penis thrust 356 times during intercourse with a thrust speed of 1.1 thrust per second, lasting a total of 5.4 minutes. So the average penis size is 5.1 inches, according to the internet. If the forestroke is 5.1 inches, the backstroke is 5.1 inches, giving us a total of 10.2 inches of dick per stroke, assuming full penetration each time. At 356 strokes times 10.2 inches gives us a total of 302 feet of dick delivered during sex. For reference, a U.S. football field is 360 feet in length, at least touchdown line to touchdown line. I don't know sports. So almost a whole football field length of dick. Ponder on that one till the next episode. In conclusion, there are a couple million swingers in the U.S. and a bunch more around the world. It's hard to get a definitive answer on who is and who is not in the lifestyle because of all this data is self-reported and we are a secretive bunch of people. Ain't like they ask about this on the census form. No matter how much action you're getting or not getting, as long as you're happy with the answer, I'm happy for you. I always appreciate hearing your feedback and comments on episodes or suggestions for topics, so feel free to reach out to me. My personal disclaimer, I am not a medical professional nor a trained and certified educator of any kind in any way. I am a guy with a microphone sharing my personal experiences with you. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and please join us for the next episode. Wherever you may do today, I hope you have a fantastic time doing it. Know that you are appreciated and loved. Have a great day.